Any possibility, however remote, of an amicable settlement between Eisner and Katzenberg were dashed the weekend of September 16th, when the New Yorker magazine faxed Eisner and Katzenberg advance copies of an article by Ken Auletta, The Human Factor, which was an account of Katzenberg's ouster. Someone in Katzenberg's office faxed a copy of the article to his lawyer, Bert Fields, with a note from Katzenberg, "Thank you for all your help." But a copy of the fax was mistakenly sent to Eisner's office. As Eisner told Tony Schwartz a few days later, "I can't talk any more to Jeffrey Katzenberg. Sending lawyer everything I ever said to him, he tells Geffen or media. Now bringing up the whole financial thing in media." When we got our New Yorker story faxed to us, he put on a Bert Fields cover page. "So, Jeffrey is caught in his tracks. I said to Jeffrey, I would suggest you don't negotiate with me in the newspapers like you did your last situation. Finally, I read this piece. I decided it is over forever. I don't care what he thinks. I'm not going to pay him any of the money." Despite the near total rupture with Eisner, Katzenberg was determined to leave on a semblance of his own terms. He attended the New York Film Festival for the opening of Tim Burton's Ed Wood, and he went to Washington for the premiere of Robert Redford's Quiz Show. Then, on October 1st, 1994, he got into his car parked next to Eisner's and left the Disney lot for the last time. Part 2. Disenchanted Kingdom. 8. With the vexing Katzenberg situation resolved and his stamina returning, Eisner was determined to reassert his own leadership and reverse the negative press that, he was convinced, was being orchestrated by Katzenberg and his allies. One way to do this in the deal-crazed mid-1990s was to do something big, like acquire a broadcast network. In the wake of the FCC's decision to repeal the so-called FinCEN, financial syndication, rules, which had long prohibited the Hollywood studios from owning a network and vice versa, all three major networks were potentially on the block. Eisner had already talked with Dan Burke about acquiring ABC. Barry Diller had been negotiating with Larry Tisch to buy CBS, and Jack Welch, GE's chairman, had been grumbling about NBC, then in third place among the major networks. The GE Pension Fund was a major investor in a private equity fund run by Shamrock Holdings, the Disney investment vehicle run by Stanley Gold. Gold had been hearing from GE people that Jack Welch might be willing to sell the network, which didn't fit with GE's insistence on staying only in businesses it could dominate. After several discussions between Gold and Welch, Gold proposed that they get together with Eisner. In mid-September, they all gathered at the executive dining room in the GE building in Rockefeller Center. It was Eisner's first trip since his surgery. Eisner was intrigued by NBC as a possible turnaround candidate, just as ABC had been when Eisner had helped elevate it to first from third place. On the flight to New York, Eisner told Gold that Bob Wright, the GE executive Welch had put in charge of NBC, was a corporate finance suit who knew nothing about the creative business of network television, a view curiously at odds with Eisner's own oft-stated view that good managers were fungible.